for some reason, I don't know why, I had in my head that to be successful, you had to be a jerk. You had to and I don't know where that came from. It was just in my head that, you know, you had to be willing to push people down and take advantage of people and be me only oriented, me first oriented. For some reason, I had all that in my head and I was wrong.
Welcome to the Business of Sales podcast. I'm your host, Morris Sims. Hey, do you ever feel like you're working harder than ever before, but your business and your income, well, they're just not growing like you want them to? Are you putting in more hours every week and seeing essentially the same results? Well, I can tell you, I've been there and I've done that. I learned how to go from 30 grand a year and 2 weeks off to almost $500,000 a year and 5 weeks off. We know how to help you grow your business, your time, and your income. This podcast is all about helping you grow. We have top salespeople and business owners sharing their knowledge with you every week, and a few times a month, well, I'm going to share specific growth strategies with you as well. So, hey, let's make it happen right now. Here's this week's episode. Our guest today at the Business of Sales is E.A. Sulkovitz, and E.A. is the founder of Givers University, and he's done so many different things over his lifetime that E.A., just hit the highlights for us, if you would. How did you get to where you are today?
Well, I can share with you that a big part of it really was my business mentor, and I was very blessed to be able to meet him at an early age. Because of how circumstances sort of unfolded, and was sort of strange the way it unfolded, but I was certainly blessed, that's for sure. And he had a profound impact on me and changed the trajectory of my life, since really, you know, my upbringing was very humble, the upbringing of a milkman. And would you like me to sort of share with your audience a little bit about that background?
Sure, please. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I was born in Chicago. I live in Michigan now. But I lived in the area, the greater area of Chicago. With this area was Oak Brook, and my father was a milkman. And I'm 65 years old now, so I was 5 years old at that time. So literally 60 years ago, man, does that go by fast? And at that time period, my father was a one man operation for a dairy called Twin Oaks Dairy, and back then, milk came in glass gallon jugs, and there was a box outside everyone's house, and that was the milkman's box. The funny thing, Morris, was that even back then, it was so amazing that there was always money in the milkman box outside the house, and no one touched it, not one single time. You know, it was just certainly different times, right? So my father was, he had his own route, and it was just one man operation, if you will. And I think the first thing that I sort of stuck in my mind a little bit, even at an early age, was I remember my father getting up at 3 a.m. And back then, the only trucks that were refrigerated trucks for transporting milk were the big 18 wheelers. The truck for the delivery men, like my father, he had his own truck. You had to go to the dairy and cut the ice and put the ice in your truck. So I remember him, these huge, 6 foot blocks of ice, and he had this ice pick, and he'd go through and cut it and then fill up the truck with this ice to keep it cold, while we were delivering milk. And I remember him saying over and over again, "Well, when we're done, we're done," and I remember him saying that phrase over and over again. And I think it just sort of impacted me that, if we want to get things done, it's up to us to get it done. We don't need to have someone looking over our shoulder telling us be here, there, be there, there. And so I think that was like my first inkling, if you will, of, what being a self-starter was all about, that, it's personal responsibility. When you want to do something, you just get in there and get it done, and you get it done as soon as possible so you can go on to the next thing. And I just remember my father saying those words to me over and over again. And then at the ripe old age of 16, and this is where it starts to move into the mentorship, if you will, which was really sort of fascinating. I'm still sort of, it was in my life, and I'm still amazed by how it had transpired. At the ripe old age of 16, I took my first big step towards success and in sales, and I became a janitor.
Hey, by the way, if you'd like a free audio file with 15 marketing and prospecting ideas, plus a bonus to go on top of that, just go to www.morrissims.com/free audio, all one word, free audio. That's Morris Sims, MORRISSIMS.com/ free audio, all one word, and get your file now. There's a bonus in there about how to become more effective using your mind. So it's just chock full of information that you can listen to in chunks, or you can listen to it all at once, whatever you want, whenever you've got some time. Every time you listen to it, there's going to be something on there that you can use right now to help you in your business, to help you grow your business, to get what you want. And also, when you do that, you're going to be on the list to receive our weekly wisdom email. Now, this week, we're talking about strategy and how your strategy helps you get what you want. So go on and go to www.morrissims.com/free audio, and you'll get it all right now. Let's get back to the show.
And you think, well, what does a janitor have to do with sales? Well, I would clean places during the day, and then also during the day for a couple hours a day, I would cold call in businesses and just sort of canvas industrial parks with brochures and just ask them, were they happy with their janitorial service? And just, you know, and it was all about numbers. I just hit 20 of them every single day. I remember at 16 years old, just going in the 20 different businesses every day, giving them each a brochure and asking that question if they were happy. And an interesting thing, Morris, was here I was when they said they weren't happy, which there was a number of them. Here I am, 16 years old, talking to a businessman about a service, a janitorial service, of which he's already had 20 of them. And he knows they all hire the cheapest labor. And here I am saying we're going to do a better job than the previous 20 he's already had. And I have to tell you, it was quite interesting, to say the least, and certainly a learning background, if you will. But also, at that age, while I was 16, I was able to be bonded, which means insured. And so if my buffer went crazy and I hit a piece of equipment that was expensive, the insurance company would pay for it. So that also allowed me to be able to be in real places that had real expensive equipment and also expensive homes. And one of the homes I was in was of a particular lady whose name was June. Now, the name won't mean anything to your listeners until I reference a particular movie that was out recently. There was a movie within the last couple of years, and it was called The Founder. It was about McDonald's, and Michael Keaton plays Ray Kroc. Did you happen to catch it by any chance, Morris?
Oh, absolutely. Loved it. I thought it was great.
Well, in the movie, Michael Keaton, and by the way, I lived the whole McDonald's experience. Like I said, I'm 65 now, so, you know, and even my father, when we went home on the milk route at the end of the day, we went by that McDonald's in Des Plaines, the first franchise. I must have went by it 100 times. I remember when they put 1 million hamburgers on the sign. I thought, man, 1 million burgers—that's crazy, you know. And now they don't even do the numbers anymore, right? So what was interesting was that in the movie, and by the way, I can share with you, that was not how it was. I mean, I lived the whole experience. I lived in Oak Brook, where the world headquarters of McDonald's was, there was a lot of Hollywood spin on Ray Kroc because he wasn't that way. And, you know, they built in a lot of drama, but there were events that it was based on, and that part is accurate and et cetera. Well, during the movie, Morris, Michael Keaton playing Ray Kroc constantly is talking to a lady outside the office whose name is June. He says, June this, June that, June that. That's June Martino. That's the lady whose house I cleaned every Wednesday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So every Wednesday I was there at June's house at June Martino. And that same day, I mean, obviously that's an actress in the movie, but the real June Martino. And this was the interesting thing about that. She lived in Ginger Creek, which was basically Oak Brook, but a real nice, super elegant, you know, million-dollar homes back then. I was 16 years old, in this area called Ginger Creek, where she lived, and she had bought homes for her sons there, and I cleaned her sons' houses as well. But every Wednesday, I was at June's house, and she had a full-time maid and butler in this million-dollar house. And here's the thing that was amazing to me, Morris. She was the exact opposite of what I thought she would be. For some reason, I don't know why, I had it in my head that to be successful, you had to be a jerk. You had to and I don't know where that came from. It was just in my head that, you know, you had to be willing to push people down and take advantage of people and be me only oriented, me first oriented. You had to be the first one to be able to say, you know, it's just business. You know, for some reason I had all that in my head and I was wrong, but it was there. And Morris, she was the opposite. She couldn't have been any more approachable. She couldn't have been any nicer. And I'm thinking, man, this is so different than I thought. I'm in this million-dollar house. She's got a full-time maid and butler. I'm there, you know, to buff the floors with a special buffing pad and clean the swimming pool and to clean the garage. By the way, loves cleaning the garage. The reason why was in order to do it, I had to pull out the Rolls Royce. and so I had to sit in a car that was worth 10 lifetimes of my income. And then at night, I would go home and drive my car, which was a Rolls Canardly. And I don't know if you're familiar with those, but they roll down one hill and they can hardly make it up the next. So that's a Rolls Canardly. I had one of those. So here I was in this house, and I'm fascinated by the whole thing. I thought, man, this is crazy. This person is, she's nice. She's approachable. She's never condescending to the help. I mean, you know, and if I was looking down, buffing the floor, and she walked through the room and saw me first, she'd say hi to me first. I mean, she was that approachable. So one day, Morris, she was in an extra good mood, and I thought, this is it. This is the day. So I mustered up all the courage that a snot-nosed 16-year-old can muster up. I'm going to go ask June Martino, the local icon, a question. So I went up to her, and I got to tell you, Morris, I was shaking in my janitorial boot. And I went up to her, and I said, hi, June. She said, hi. I mean, just smiled, you know, very. I was amazed by how nice she was all the time. And I said, can I ask you a question? She goes, sure. And I said, could you tell me about it? She said, well, what? And I said, well, the whole McDonald's thing. I'm not kidding. She put her arm around me, brought me in the kitchen. I had asked her in the morning, and the entire day sat me in the kitchen and told me the entire story. And in the McDonald's, in the founder story, where she actually, if you remember, she worked for Ray Kroc when he was a milkshake mixer salesman before he met the brothers.
Right, right.
The McDonald's brothers. And so she starts there. That's where she starts the story, where she's already working for him. All the way through, all of the events, all the way up to us sitting in the kitchen. She even has the maiden butler bringing us food so she can keep telling me the story. And I'm just shocked. I'm thinking, man, I'm a 16-year-old kid. What? This is June Martino. She's worth more zeros than I can count on my fingers and toes. And she's telling me this whole story. And in the movie, She referenced decades earlier a certain event that actually did happen. It didn't happen away because the whole movie was Hollywood spin, but the event did take place. June, who kept the books, went to Ray, Michael Keaton, and says, we have no money. We have money going out. Dancers coming in. There's no money to pay anyone. There's no money whatsoever. And that perpetuates Michael Keaton, Ray Kroc, calling the brothers, and they have this drama argument because Ray says, I need more percentage. I'm not getting enough percentage on the, you know, my royalty. And he slams down the phone and that whole thing. It didn't exactly happen that way, but nonetheless, she did reference that event. And she said, there was no money. So I agreed. She's telling me now. She says, I agreed to work for no money. She says, I had to. There was no money to pay me. So I wasn't getting paid. And she said, and Ray agreed to give me worth less than zero company stock. And he would agree to take some of the phone calls from my bill collector so they wouldn't hound me on the phone. So I asked her. I said, June, I'm a janitor, as you know. I get paid every Friday. If I don't get paid on Friday, I'm not showing on Saturday. I need that paycheck.
Yeah.
I said, why did you do it? And you know, Marsh, she sat back in her chair and did this eye lock on me, just stared into my eyes. And I could tell right then she just left the room. She's staring at me, but she truly is, because I just simply asked her, why'd you do it? And because, and I realized right then, I had just asked her a question no one had ever asked her before. Everyone always wanted to know what happened with McDonald's, but no one ever asked her why. So I asked her, why did you do it? Why'd you work for no money whatsoever? Why? I mean, and you kept working there. Why? You know, I wouldn't do that. Why'd you? And about 10 seconds went by, and I got to tell you, Morris, it seemed like, you know, like 15 minutes, and I'm thinking, do, you know, it's just staring at me. And I could tell she's truly in the recesses of her mind, thinking, why did she do it? And when she spoke, I will never forget what she said, the way she said it that made the hair stand up on the back of my neck, and then what my instantaneous thought was right after she spoke. So when I asked her, June, why'd you work for nothing? You know, why not get paid? She replied and she said to me, because I believed in Ray. And the way she said it made the hair stand up on the back of my neck with the feeling and what she's, you know, the, what was behind it. And I remember, Morris, my first thought, it was instantaneous. My first thought was, that's it. That's the answer. I need me a Ray Kroc. I need to find a Ray Kroc. It certainly didn't work out too bad for her. I'm in this million-dollar house and she's doing okay. I need someone that can be my Ray Kroc, put me under his wing, show me everything, because I don't even know what I don't know. I just know I don't know it. And I need someone that can teach me. And I remember having that thought. And it wasn't about, and I did something, Morris, at this point that was, I guess you could say, intelligently ignorant. I inadvertently, and I didn't mean to, ask the right question. I inadvertently just threw it out there and said, where's my Ray Kroc? Where would I meet my Ray Kroc? And I didn't know right then how profound that question was going to be. Later on, my business mentor taught me, as I looked back on it, that he said, you know, everyone lives backwards. He said, everyone always wants to get the answers in life. What's the answer to this? What's the answer to that? I need to find the answers. They're looking for the answers. He said, wrong. It's backwards. He said, the answers are always there. They always have been there, and they always will be there. They're omnipresent. He said, what we need to do is we need to ask the right questions, because we need to focus on the questions, not the answers. Because the answers will be there for the right questions. He said, and we become self-fulfilling prophecies in our life. And because of these questions we ask, we get those answers. And so I inadvertently, Morris, threw out the right question, not even realizing I did it. I didn't know what mentor was. I didn't even know how to spell it. I'd spent my Hooked on Phonics money. I didn't know how to spell mentor. You know, but and for your listeners, only a few of them might know the, you know, what Hooked on Phonics was if they referenced saw the commercial years ago, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Here I am. So now finally, about 3 months later, I'm at the same janitorial service and the phone rings. My business mentor and my boss, Jerry, of the janitorial service, that was in Addison, Illinois, another suburb of Chicago. He answered the phone and it was at night. It was after dinner time. I was talking to him at the office and he talks for a few minutes on the phone, hangs up the phone and he says, well, a guy's in from Detroit and, he's opening a diamond store and he needs some carpeting for the diamond store. And, he's leaving on a plane tomorrow. So he needs to see some samples tonight. I said, okay, what's that have to do with me? He said, I need you to go. I said, Jerry, I'm not going. I've been cleaning all day. I'm tired. I'm physically exhausted. So this is the first time I said, no, we're going to count how many times I said, no. So I said, Jerry, I'm not going. I'm tired. He says, I need you to go and give this carpet bid job. I said, Jerry, I'm not going. You know I don't know carpet. I know how to shampoo it. I can vacuum it. I don't know how to give a carpet estimate. He said, well, I'll give you a wheel and you walk this way and this way across the room and call me on the phone. I said, Jerry, I'm not going. I don't know how to do this. I said, you know I don't know anything about carpeting. And he said, I'll tell you what. So now I said no three times so far. He said, I'll tell you what. If you go, I'll give you your pick of any Saturday off you want. And now, by the way, for a janitor, that's a huge negotiation chip because we work when businesses are closed. So Saturday morning to night, we're cleaning. So I wanted to make sure he didn't try to trick my ears. And I repeated it back. Any Saturday I want off? He said, yeah, any Saturday. I said, okay. So I threw the carpet samples in my rolls canardly. And setting the stage for your listeners, I don't want to go. I'm physically exhausted. I'm mentally fatigued. I've been working all day. I'm going to meet this guy from Detroit. Detroit, seriously, you got to be kidding me. I'm not doing this for my boss, that's for sure. I'm doing this for only one reason. Get the Saturday off. That's it. It's the only reason. Little do I know. I'm getting ready to meet the man that will change the trajectory of my life forever. The man who will become the father I never had, even though I had a father. I will become the son he never had, even though he had a son. He will rewire the burnt out wires in the son of a milkman, burnt out janitor who thinks his fun time is getting three songs on a jukebox at 2 a.m. and cleaning a bowling alley. So I met this man, and after I worked for him for a couple of years, he offered me a job. I worked for him. And then when I was 19 years old, I asked him the one question. And I said, Sam, his name was Sam Robbins. I said, Sam, will you teach me everything? And I mean all of it, none of it. Don't hold back any of it. And he said, okay, I'll teach you. He said, but I want one thing from you. And I said, what's that? He said, when the time is right and you will know that time, I want you to teach as many people as you possibly can everything I've taught you. And I said, okay. I said, yes. So at 19 years old, Morris, I made a vow. I made an oath. I made a commitment to my mentor that today is manifest as Givers University.
That's an amazing story, EA. It really, really is. That's fantastic. Tell us more.
Yeah. So at Givers University, really, to sort of take the next step and bring it forward, on what we teach, and the Reader's Digest version of that, by the way, and I should warn your listeners, I never say anything in 10 minutes if I can say it in 20. To sort of explain what we do at Givers University, I would ask your listeners a question, a couple of questions. I would say, first, think about a couple of things. Number one, think about the fires that you stomp out each day. Think about the times where your stress level goes straight through the roof. Think about the conversations you have during the day that at the end of the conversation, you don't even remember what you talked about, but you do know one thing. You have no more energy left. They just drained it all from you. All three of those scenarios, Morris, have one thing in common. They have a name attached to them. So we teach people how to discern in advance and in their relationships. And it's something I can share with you. I do 1 to 3 podcasts a day. I've done nearly 100 of them since 100 interviews on podcasts since April. And I can share with you, no one else is teaching this. No one else has explained this. We're the only entity and the only people teaching something that is so vitally important. So right now, I'm a self-improvement guy. I love self-improvement. I'm a self-improvement geek. I know you are, Morris, and I'm sure many of your listeners are as well. But, you know, that's great when we can look in the mirror and self-assess and improve ourselves. We need to do that. But one thing that's not being taught is, what about the other guy? What if he's not doing it right? What should I do about that? So what we teach is real simple. I emphatically say to all your listeners, we love everybody. I say it again, we love everybody. And we teach how to discern, aka how to separate the person who we love from their deeds, which we may not love. And by observing certain deeds, the actual deeds, observing the things they do, not broad, innocuous references and swaths of information that it sounds so good, but then when you pause on it for a moment, you say, what do I do with that now? We have made it so much more granular in our approach, breaking it all the way down to, these are the deeds. Look for these things. And we train on these things, Morris, so that people can begin to observe and discern in their relationships. And by watching people doing certain things, the actual deeds, they can then discern and say, should I bring this person closer into my life? Because givers bring with them the three W's of a giver: wisdom, wealth, and wellness. Or because I'm watching these deeds and I'm observing these things, should I begin respectfully distancing myself, not rude or insensitive or nasty, respectfully distancing myself from them because they're going to make me unwitting collateral damage, because takers bring with them the three D's of a taker. And those are defeatism, disruption, and destruction. And when I bring them closer into my life, they're bringing those things with them, and I'll be stomping out fires not of my making. Hence, my productivity will go through the floor. My stress level will go up, and my energy will go down because I'm not surrounded with energy, people that are giving me energy, and I'm giving them energy back. So we teach people how to build that community around them. It's just like a couple of interviews ago, I had a guy say, wow, this is great stuff. This is really, really good. I was just reading a book, and the book said I need to surround myself with 5 people. I said, you're absolutely right. And I said, what kind of people? And he says, well, they're good. And I said, great. Which five?
Good move.
And all of a sudden he had this blank look on his face. And I said, do you see my point? Teaching us how to discern which five. And these people, other than our thoughts and our actions, the people around us will be the third most influential thing in our lives on a day-to-day basis. The people around us that we work with, that we live with, that are, you know, that are associated in our own little community that each one of us have around us as individuals. So we teach people, Morris, through a series of courses. It's three courses that are called Give to Be Great. The first one's the giver's mindset, how givers think differently than takers. They think differently. The second is the giver's lifestyle. We identify the 30 habits that givers have. They have actually habits that they will do that you can observe. And the 30 habits of takers. And what are those? So you can contrast them and help discern. And then the third is the giver's lifelong learning. So all three of those courses, they're online courses. And it's called Give to Be Great. So we teach people how to discern. When we say giver, Morris, we're not labeling a person. We're labeling their deeds. We're labeling giver deeds. When we say taker, we're not labeling a person because we don't label people. We're labeling the deeds of a taker. So we help people, and we have a saying that givers earn three times more because givers discern three times more. We teach people discernment, and because of that, their productivity goes up, their stress level goes down, and they begin to actually have an exceptional life that doesn't wear them out at the end of each day. And that's what we teach at Givers University.
Hey, just a quick reminder, don't forget, go to www.morrissims.com/free audio and get your 15 marketing and prospecting ideas plus a bonus, as well as our weekly wisdom email. In fact, I tell you what, just go on and go there right now. Get it done and get it over with, and then you'll have the audio that you can listen to whenever you want to. Hey, thanks for listening. Okay, let's go wrap up this episode of The Business of Sales. EA, this is just so interesting to me because, and I'm just sitting here with my mouth half open just listening to you because it's perfect. It's right on target. I am just really impressed. Thank you so much for sharing all that. Tell us more about Givers University and how do I get involved with that? That sounds like three neat courses.
Well, thank you. We just go to our website. There's a big, huge update being done on it right now. They would go to our website. It's giversuniversity.com. It's plural, giversuniversity.com. And on the website, they will see a place where they can sign up for our newsletter. We have a free newsletter. It doesn't cost anything. It's absolutely free. They'll get an email back that says, please confirm you want to get communications from them because we don't spam. And we don't load up their email box. I mean, I hate that. I sign up for something, and next thing you know, I'm getting six emails a day from them. And then I unsubscribe. We send out one email a week. It's usually on Thursday. In that one email is a great new idea, thought, concept that's going to help them discern in their life. Many times it's interviews we might have done recently, factual information, things that they usable tools that we give them because we have to walk our talk. We're Givers University. So, and if by right now, if they go to the website and they don't see the sign up for the newsletter, it's because of the new website work we're having done. It'll be done in a matter of days. So they can actually go to another place and take a 7-question quiz we have. And then they go to giversuniversity.info, giversuniversity.info. And we have a 7-question quiz that's called, what is your givers and takers awareness IQ? And it's a 7-question quiz, literally takes 4 minutes. They'll get actually a self-assessment on how they're doing with their awareness level. And then at the end of that, that'll automatically put them into our system so that they'll get the once a week email from us automatically, even if they go to our website, depending on when this podcast airs. If it airs in a couple of weeks, then they'll find it on every page with giversuniversity.com, and they can just sign up for the newsletter there. But we're nurturers. We build value. They're going to get some free downloads right away. One of the downloads they'll get will be it's called the 6 arrows that takers shoot at givers. It's a great checklist. And then a couple of days later, they're going to get probably one of my favorite checklists. And this is called the 25 do's. this is a two-page download. We want them to download it. We want them to put it in their pocket, live by it, use it in your discernment, because it has the 25 things, the 25 deeds that you want to watch for in discerning givers and takers. These are the things to look for. And it's on two pages. It's literally just condensed down to very granular and very usable. These are free. We want them to have them. And then through the course of that, once a week, they'll find out about our courses and how they can participate and how they can sign up. We love to build value. And through that value, then people see the value. And then they ultimately end up participating in all of our courses because we've built so much value in their life and they see what we're teaching and that it's something that can be taught. It's a skill that simply is not being taught in relationships. And yet, and we're in a world right now, Morris, where businesses are open and closing faster than ever before. Products are being antiquated overnight by new products. What do we have left? Relationships. And no one's teaching us how to discern in them. And that's where we come in at Givers University.
Yeah, you know, our audience is mainly salespeople and salespeople in the financial services world. What sort of advice might you have for them specifically in the world they live in?
These are the three things I would share with your listeners to begin saying to themselves every day, especially if they're in a sales situation, and these are them. I will never give up. I will keep rising up, and I will always overcome.
EA, thank you. Man, that is just absolutely wonderful. I really do appreciate you being with us here today. And I hope everybody will go to giversuniversity.com and check it out and get on that list. Man, this is a great thing to have because we all need to work on our own development. We all need to spend some time thinking about what we're doing, what we're saying, and how we're saying it, and frankly, how we're treating the people around us. So, EA, you've given us some great things to think about. I appreciate it tremendously. And for everybody else out there, hey, y'all go out and make it a super special week. Do something really different for yourselves and your family this week. Have a great time, and I'll look forward to seeing you again next week on The Business of Sales.